Welcome to Coastal Cafe. I'm Aaron Barnett, your host. Coastal Cafe is a joint production of Washington Sea Grant at the University of Washington's College of the Environment and KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend. And today we have a very special guest from the National Center for Environmental Information, a NOAA facility based in Boulder. We have Dr. Carrie Wall. Hello, Carrie.
Hi, Aaron.
So since 2013, Dr. Carrie Wall has led the National Centers for Environmental Information Fisheries Acoustic Archives. These archives encompass water column sonar data established in 2014 and passive acoustic data established in 2017. Carrie and her data management team have established standards-based best practices to describe, submit, ingest, query, and access large volumes of geophysical data, enabling the archive to grow rapidly to over 200 terabytes. Is that correct? Terabytes?
Terabytes.
Terabytes. Okay, thank you. Mainly from NOAA sources, Carrie has several additional projects underway with colleagues across NOAA and students at the University of Colorado that span the development of new data portal for the NOAA Navy Sanctuary Soundscape Monitoring Project, exploration of baleen whale sound production off the Olympic Coast, using NOAA National Park Service Ocean Noise Reference Station Network, application of artificial intelligence to extract patterns from archived water column sonar data, and development of a new interactive cloud-based visualization portal to explore archived multiple frequency echo sounder data. Carrie received a Master of Science and a PhD in Marine Science from the University of South Florida, where her research focused on recreationally caught king mackerel and the relationship to oceanographic features, and passive acoustic monitoring of fish on the West Florida shelf. While in graduate school, she conducted research on deep sea fish sound production at the University of Victoria, which is right across the water from here, and taught undergraduate students at Vancouver Island University in British Columbia, Canada. Whew, that's a lot of stuff to hold a candle to there, Carrie. Could you describe for our listeners what the program looks like if they click on our website and kind of give what you do in a nutshell, a little bit of the history of it, and what you're doing now?
Yeah, that sounds great. Thanks so much for the introduction. Apologies for it being so long. So at the NOAA National Centers for Environmental Information, as you've kind of already stated, we've established several archives. One of the more recent archives is our passive acoustic archive. And that was, work really began in 2015. We got really underway in 2017. So it's quite new. But scientists across NOAA and other federal agencies have been collecting passive acoustic data for a long, long time. And so these data sets are really valuable to NOAA. But when you think about our archive, we have a very large tape storage system. So people send us their data, their audio files, something that you can immediately hear. And we store those on these big tape systems for generations to come for over 75 years. And we also have a web interface, which allows the public to discover the data. So this is a map that shows where the data were collected, and it provides information, the details about those data. So anyone across the country, across the world, can come and explore and access these data to understand new and different things. And so one of the most important parts about being an archive is not only providing long-term stewardship of really, really valuable data, but to also improve the quality, to go beyond the data's original collection purpose by making it available to scientists and other researchers to explore it in new and different ways. And so it's really the reuse of those data that help to add value to what are publicly funded data if they're collected within NOAA or other federal agencies. These are the public's data.
When we say passive acoustic data, what does that mean, and what are the mechanisms to collect that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So when we talk about passive acoustic data, we're really talking about listening. So there's active acoustic and there's passive acoustic, and acoustic is really talking about sound, the use of sound, and we use sound to understand our environment and or the ocean. And active acoustic means you're emitting a sound, you're actively making a sound and listening for that return. And there's information in the return of that sound that we use to understand that environment. In passive, we're not making a sound. We're just listening for the sounds in the ocean. And you do that by using an underwater microphone called a hydrophone. So the instrumentation to collect these data is really a microphone, which is attached to a microcontroller, which is a very small computer. And it tells the hydrophone when to record, where to store those recordings, storage space for those recordings, and of course, batteries to keep everything running. And then since we're talking about an ocean environment, you now need a container to hold all of that, that can handle the cold, the pressure, and of course, the wetness of the ocean.
How deep can some of these hydrophones go? Are there any limits to depth?
They can go very, very deep. And the only, you need to have, it's again, the cold, you need to be able to handle the cold, the pressure, and the wetness of the ocean. And so the pressure increases exponentially, you know, as you go further and further down into the water. And so you need to use some sort of system. And a lot of times we use oil within the container to keep water out and to keep the pressure from the outside water from crushing the precious electronics inside. So as long as your system is capable of withstanding that pressure, it can go fairly deep. And there's also the cold component. As you go deeper in the water, deeper in the ocean, the water gets much colder. And so that is something that you need to have your electronics running, and batteries don't like to get cold. They don't work as well in cold environments. So that's a concern as well. And of course, the wetness part, electronics and especially salty seawater do not mix. Things fail immediately once water starts to seep in. And so again, this is making sure water can't get in, that you're withstanding that pressure. But they can go deep, deep down into the ocean. And it's really valuable to have hydrophones way off in the deep ocean all over our world to pick up sounds that are traveling long, long distances and away from coasts where we're not able to survey just using regular methods. It's very difficult to get to those deep ocean and far off ocean waters. But when you put an instrumentation down there and are able to come back and collect it, the wealth of information that it contains is really valuable to our understanding of the ocean.
So do you have any idea what the deepest depths some of this equipment has been placed at?
Let's see. I don't know of the absolute record for data that was, hydrophones that were put down in the water off the top of my head, but data that we have in our archive, they're down at 1,000 meters, so about 3,000 feet. And that's still pretty deep in itself. And that's certainly not reaching the depth, the deepest parts. And a lot of these hydrophones are used on platforms that can move around, and they're used in platforms that you just stick down in the ocean. And so it kind of depends on if it's on a glider, which can move itself around and you can collect data over longer periods and bigger areas, you know, maybe that can dive deep. But if you put a hydrophone and acoustic recording system down near an undersea volcano, you're getting pretty far down there.
Yeah, my next question was just related to gliders and whether you place the equipment on it. So you answered my next question. Thank you. And I understand that you have some sounds you'd like to share with us. So I'm going to let you go ahead and start with some of the sounds that you find interesting and that you'd like to share with our listeners.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. One of the really interesting things about passive acoustics is how accessible it is in understanding our oceans in a very immediate way, because we can hear what is going on in the ocean and what's called an ocean soundscape. And you can think of a landscape as something when you're standing and looking out over a beautiful mountain view, which kind of immediately comes to mind. I'm in Boulder, Colorado, so we have mountain views, not ocean views. But you can see so many things in front of you, from the trees to the mountains to a much denser part of a forest and roads and sometimes people. And so all of those components make that landscape. It's very similar within the ocean when what we call a soundscape. Many different sounds contribute to what you would hear in that environment. One example is sounds. There are kind of three main categories of sounds that you would hear. One is from what we call the natural or the physical environment. Things that happen. For example, rain. So here's an example of rain. This is a recording that was underwater, and it's the sound of rain hitting the top of the ocean. is really loud. This is quite a rainstorm, and it just sounds like static, but it's introduced a lot of sound into that environment at that time. And it's interesting because something that's happening above the water is really making a loud sound and contributing to that soundscape. Now, one of those other categories is biological. So what animals in the ocean are producing sound? And there are a wide range of animals, from invertebrates like snapping shrimp, which you'll hear here, these guys are really neat. It sounds like a rice cereal popping once you add milk to it. And it really is a popping sound. That is what we call it. They have this big claw. They cavitate a bubble in that claw, and it makes this popping sound. Now, something many folks don't know is that fish also produce sound. And I'll play a toadfish sound for you right now. So go ahead.
Now that sounds like a toad. Does it look like a toad?
They are not pretty. Yeah, they do kind of look a little toady. They like to hang out on the bottom, and they have a bit of a speckling like a frog. And they are not considered a very pretty fish, these poor guys, but they make fascinating sounds. And that was actually multiple toadfish making sounds at once. You kind of heard them calling on top of each other. And it's a very, very consistent sound that toadfish make, especially all fish. They don't have a wide range of sounds that they can produce. They're limited by their anatomy. They don't have vocal cords. So they actually use muscles within their body, generally speaking, to produce those sounds. For example, they're banging on an air bladder in their body. It's kind of like a drum. Now, marine mammals, our charismatic megafauna, produce a wide range of sounds. They have much more complex anatomy to help them do this. So here's an example of a humpback whale. It's much more diverse. And they also produce sounds in different frequency ranges. So for toadfish, they're generally very low frequency. It's a low, low pitch like this. And then with humpback whales, they have a wide variety of frequencies in which they use. And then dolphins tend to make whistle sounds that are even higher frequency. So it can be a little bit hard to hear those higher pitch sounds. Now, one of my favorites is a Weddell seal, because these guys are out in Antarctica and they make the most bizarre sounds. I'll let it play. It really sounds like a space alien landing. Now, to bring us back to the West Coast, one of the last animal sounds I'd like to play for you is an orca. So some pretty interesting sounds that animals themselves produce. And they produce these sounds to communicate with each other, to navigate the water, to find food, when communicating with each other, there's also a lot of behavior associated with that. It could be defending territory from an imposing male. It could be trying to find a female, or it could be to find a mate.
If you're just joining us, this is KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, and I'm Aaron Barnett, today's host of Kev's Cafe, and we're speaking with Dr. Kerry Wall of NOAA's National Center for Environmental Information. We're talking about passive acoustic data. So, Kerry, is there anything you could comment on about the sounds that we just heard before we go into some more sounds?
So you heard a lot of different species making sounds, and they do this for different reasons. Sounds play an essential role in critical activities for marine species, like breeding, foraging, maintaining social structure, and avoiding predators. For example, whales and dolphins, they send and receive these complex sounds to communicate with each other, to navigate the water, and to find food. And fish and invertebrates, just like the toadfish and the snapping shrimp that I played here, they use these sounds for, you know, these basic life functions, finding food, defending a territory, or finding a mate. And it's really important to these animals to be able to continue to communicate, and this is how they thrive. But humans have introduced increasing amounts of sound in the ocean since the beginning of the industrial age. And we have a wide range of activities in the ocean that cause sounds to be introduced. I'll play a couple of those for you now.
Thank you.
So this is an example of a cargo ship. So pretty loud. And so global shipping has introduced huge amounts of sound into our ocean. Here's another example, though there are many, many others.
Sonar, I recognize that.
Yeah, so that's some sonar. That's some that's part of the active acoustic side. And so it's emitting sound into the ocean to listen for that return. And one of the challenges that we have is there's an, as I mentioned, an increasing amount of sound being introduced into our ocean. And so here's an example of what happens when marine animals need this space to communicate and humans start to impose. Going to cut it off there. I did have to turn my volume down a little bit just because that the sound of that boat coming in was so loud in my speakers. So what you heard to start with was multiple humpback whales making a wide variety of sounds, calls, and echolocation. Those were those clicks. And then slowly came in, and then very quickly and loudly was a vessel going by.
And so yeah, what kind of a vessel that was, just perchance?
Based on the frequency of sound that it was making, it sounds like it was a smaller vessel, possibly an outboard motor of a of something. So the bigger the vessel and the bigger the engine, the lower the frequency of sound it makes. And so in the example of that cargo ship that I played, it was very low. That higher sound that we just heard, that was probably a smaller vessel. One of the reasons why sound is so important, especially for these marine mammals, is because they've evolved over millions of years to really depend on sound. Sound travels faster, 5 times faster in water than in air. And the water itself is far more turbid than any air environment, which means the visibility and the use of eyesight is decreased, but the ability to make and communicate through sound and through and using your hearing is a far better mechanism. And so when these sounds, again, that's really important for mammals, and that's great for them. They use sound and they can communicate longer distances. But it also means that these low frequency sounds, especially created by these larger vessels, can also travel much, much farther and have wider ranging impacts on the animals in a much bigger space. And so NOAA has been becoming increasingly involved to understand how marine animals use the sound and the potential impacts of man-made noise on the underwater environment. It is a very big focus of a lot of the research that is being conducted.
I understand some of these sounds can travel tens of and sometimes hundreds of miles. Is that true?
That's absolutely true.
Yeah. Could you give an example of, say, a humpback or a cargo ship?
how far those sounds would propagate to go through the water. Let's see. Off the top of my head, I'm not going to give really great estimates. Unfortunately, as with many answers from a scientist, it's going to be, well, it's complicated. It depends on a large variety of factors within the ocean, and understanding sound propagation and modeling sound propagation, which is how sound is traveling. There's a lot of information that is very dependent in order to answer that question. Generally speaking, those lower frequency sounds will travel farther. Higher frequency sounds, that higher pitch, is not going to travel as far. So the distances will be significantly less. And so it's really these low frequency sounds produced by a wide variety of things. Blue whales produce very low frequency sounds, which is great because they go far distances. And so it's also understanding, well, is that also at the same frequency range where global shipping traffic has the majority of their sound components as well? When you have these far reaching sounds in an animal that is used to being able to hear and communicate long distances, that's where the problems really begin. And it is absolutely tens to hundreds of miles, if not more.
To localize the that issue, or that issue out here in Washington State, we have the southern resident killer whales, which as of last year, under a new set of regulations and scrutiny because they're endangered. And a report just came out, maybe you were involved with it, about the impacts of the shipping through Haro Strait, ships going up to Canada, impacting their feeding habits. And so I just wanted to connect what you're talking about and connect with what's going on here in our area, that it is a concern.
Yeah, absolutely. I was not involved with that. I normally get to deal with the great scientists who are involved with that, but I do know NOAA research is conducted in the Washington area, and that includes the use of passive acoustics to study the endangered population of southern resident killer whales. And their particular focus is on understanding the impacts of vessel noise and the presence on these, you know, the disturbance on these populations. And so that's out of the Northwest Fisheries Science Center. And it is incredibly valuable, and it really complements this topic, really complements the great information on southern resident killer whales that was discussed in your podcast on October 16th. So there's a lot of ties right there, and it's incredibly valuable to use many different ways to understand an organism and the impacts that we have on it. And one of those ways is passive acoustics. It's really powerful.
Has any of this data been used at upper level policy decisions that you know of?
So NOAA has an ocean acoustics program, and within that program, which is to support and conduct research examining the potential impacts of human sound on marine animals. Within that, they have developed an ocean noise strategy roadmap, which offers approaches to achieve an integrated and comprehensive understanding and management of ocean noise impacts on protected species and habitats. And so from that, they're really guiding additional research that will be used to mitigate the impacts of vessels within certain areas, high impact areas. And so this information is also being used to inform Congress on where policies should go. And therefore, it's kind of this it's a mechanism to also understand where additional research and funding should be supported. But there are strong discussions and connections between the research that's been conducted at NOAA, as well as the Department of Transportation, Department of Energy. This is not a singular NOAA problem, and it is really important for regulatory information to have the best information possible, and passive acoustics is really starting to inform that.
All right. So if somebody wants to access this data set at the National Center for Environmental Information, where would they go to find this?
I believe probably that we have a website, a project page, and I think maybe the best way to find it, because it'll always come up, is find your favorite search engine and search for NCEI Passive Acoustics, And that will take you to the NCEI Passive Acoustic Archive project page. From that, you can find out more information about our partners, about the archive itself. And there's also a link there to our web portal. And this is where anyone can come and discover where the archive data have been collected, information describing those data sets, as well as how to access it.
Fantastic. Well, we're going to be wrapping up here, but I want to give you a chance to add anything you'd like to add you feel is important or that we missed. I'm just going to leave it open to you if you'd like to go ahead and comment on anything about this.
Sure. Thank you so much. So we've talked a lot about the value of passive acoustics, how it's important for the environment. And I really do also want to emphasize the value of an archive. And so with centralized access, what we're doing is we're supporting all of NOAA, taking a large amount of their data that is, it can be very difficult to support decade after decade. We're able to collect more and more data. And being able to put that in a central location, this can lead to an improved understanding of the acoustic world of our ocean, which supports NOAA's mission, and it supports so much additional research. And it can help answer new and previously unimaginable questions by bringing all these data sets together in one place where we can access them and process them.
Well, it's been great having you on the show, and I think this is going to stand out as one of our more interesting and interactive half-hour sessions with a scientist. And I'd love to say thank you for joining us, Dr. Wall. This is Aaron Barnett, and you've been listening to Coastal Cafe, a joint production of Washington Seagarden at the UW College of the Environment and KPDZ 91.9 FM. Washington Sea Grant helps NOAA and marine life thrive by providing research, technical expertise, and education to support the conservation of our ocean and coastlines. I'd like to thank our program director, Larry Stein, and production engineer, Jared Dufresne, and as always, a special shout out to the band Kuik for sharing their music with us at the opening and closing of this program. Thank you for listening, and thank you, Dr. Wall.
Thank you.
And have a great day. Hatuasiku ha, hingin ani. Hatuasiku ha.